Let me just do a little bit of catching up and then we'll go on. We tried to look at the first four chapters yesterday of this book. It's a book called Christianity in Real Life by William Deal. Mr. Deal is a layman, a member of the Lutheran Church in America. He lives out east. He's in the management aspect of steel. I don't know whether it's U.S. Steel or what. He's one of the larger companies. Is it Bethlehem? Bethlehem Steel. And he's been active in his congregation and in the synod and in the national church, and has also, after writing this book, been writing a column in the Lutheran magazine for the LCA, and does quite a bit of speaking, of course, since this book came out too. Mr. Deal announces in his preface that, and I think there's just a couple of copies of the book around, isn't there?
I have one.
You have one, and the gentleman there has one?
I have one.
One. So if somebody want to loan you one afterward, maybe just to look at it, we ran out over at the bookstore. The two things that Mr. Deal says that he's dealing with are two gaps that he is aware of. The first gap is the one which is present in his own life, and he thinks in the lives of thousands of dedicated Christian lay people. The gap between the Sunday faith and the weekday world. The things that are said and professed and sung about and confessed and taught on Sunday, how the difference between all of that and what actually happens day by day in his life the rest of the week. He thinks that's a big gap in his own life, and he thinks it is in the lives of many others. The second gap that he's writing about in this book is the one which is present in the life of the church, the institutional church. He doesn't mean the Holy Christian Church composed of all people who believe in Christ and whatever we may understand that to be, but the institutions of the church. And that gap is between what the church proclaims as the role of Christian laypersons, what the people who are members of the institutional church ought to be doing in the world, and what the church actually does to support that role. Again, he says, they say, here's what the lay people ought to be doing out in the world, but what they support is something very different, or there is not any support at all for what they say. Those two gaps are what this book is about. Again, in the first four chapters, which we talked about yesterday, in the first chapter, he gives a story of four people and illustrates very committed people. One, a Jew, and a woman, and a young woman, and a teenager, and a doctor, and shows how out of their commitment to do something out in the world, because there was no one there to help, no one there to support, no one there to guide, no one there to fall back on, it didn't work, and in fact, in each instance, there was a rejection of the institutional church for what they were about, even though they had very serious and strongly committed projects, activities that they were about out in the world because of their faith in Christ. So those are really illustrations. He ends up saying, it's pretty obvious from these illustrations and many, many more that he knows of, that something is missing. That's the title of his first chapter. The second is called The Rhythm of the Christian Life. And there he talked pretty much at length about how he believes from the scriptures and from a number of books that were written beginning in 1954 and probably before, but largely in the early 50s, that the rhythm of the church is to be gathered, to be nourished, to be forgiven, to be refreshed, to be encouraged, to be corrected, and then to be scattered, to be get out. And so the rhythm is gathering and scattering, gathering and scattering. He thinks that that's a very important understanding of the church. He feels that largely what has happened is the church has focused on gathering and rarely gotten out around to scattering. And he thinks that's a failure, that we get so caught up in what we are about to keep the church going, the maintenance of the institution, that we don't get around to the others. And I think I illustrated by saying the pastor, well, that was in the next year, but in the pastor that I listened to for about 7 or 8 years, I couldn't recall any time that I heard him preach use an illustration for service to our Lord that didn't have to do with service inside the congregation. It was the only service he illustrated was to be a member of a board, a committee, whatever was happening there. And Deal and I are not saying that's not important, but we're saying that's not the only thing. And obviously there is a stronger commitment out there. The third one, he just talked about the difference between Christianity and real life and how people come to believe then that Christianity is something different than real life. And so you have certain kinds of talk and certain kinds of feelings perhaps and even certain kinds of goals. And oh, that's all Christian, but it doesn't really attach itself to real life, and that gap he thinks is really very, very sad, very wrong to have that gap. And he illustrates that again in the chapter on Christianity and real life. And then in the fourth chapter, he talks about roles and resources. And there he talks about how many times the church just expects the clergyman and the laity to be doing certain things, and those expectations are so limited that it's very difficult to break out of it. Rather than being anti-clergy, as this kind of a book could very easily be, I think that he's very sympathetic to saying that if he were in the same place and you had been trained to do certain things, you were going to be measured for doing those certain things, and something came along and asked you to do something else, you'd probably go back and do the things you were trained for and were going to be measured about, rather than going off and doing something else. And so he thinks that it is understandable to do that. To be caught up in maintenance rather than getting out into the world. The last thing about that, I think one thing he indicated was that the language that is used by the church to cause lay people to go out and help is not helpful. His point is that we keep saying that if you know enough about Jesus Christ and believe the gospel, and the church says that enough, then when the layman gets out there into the world in the situation he has, he'll automatically know what to do. Now, that might happen, he says, but he believes most of the time that translation doesn't take place. We have to be equipped further for the kind of job that we have out in the world, whether it's raising raspberries, as we were talking yesterday, or the lady who had that $1 million grant from the federal government at the University of Southern California, the fellow that I talked about with the company. In all of those kinds of decisions, choices, and ministry that goes on, he feels that there is equipping to be done that hasn't taken place yet, and his very strong feeling is that the lay people are going to have to take the leadership in doing that. Not against the clergy, but the clergy aren't that well equipped to do it. Then the clergy will have a different role, he believes, in supporting the lay people in doing that. And that comes again in his last chapter. Now that's a summary of yesterday. Okay? Then he moves on in the chapters today, and again I'll do a little summary of 5, 6, 7, and 8, and then stop and hope that you can react and question and see what you want to say. Did any of the rest of you get to read through the 8 chapters? Did you make it through? There's plenty of other things to do besides sitting and reading, I recognize. He develops, let me read you the chapter. He says, I think there are really 4 ways of talking about the ministry of the laity out in the world. Remember again, I don't want to sound like we're saying ministry inside of the church is unimportant. There is a maintenance job to be done, that's fine. And it's important, it's basic, and that's it. But it isn't the only thing, nor does he think it's the major thing. The other 4 ministries are, and these are the 4 chapters, the ministry of the aid man, I'll say something about it, the ministry of words, the ministry of ethics, and the ministry of the change agent. Let me just, I'll do it very briefly, and then if you have questions, we can get into them. The ministry of the aid man, he draws from his work as a medic in World War II, when he was an aid man in a medical battalion. The doctors and the well-trained people were at the battalion aid station. The aid men were in jeeps out away. In his instance, he was following tanks. up closest to where the battles were being fought. When they heard one of their tanks had been hit, the aid men were the first men on the scene. And if it was minor, they'd have to be able to detect what's happened. And if it was minor, they'd do something right smack on the scene, the person would go right back in the battle. If it was a little more, they would do stopgap things and arrange for that person to be taken back to the battle aid station, battalion aid station. And if it were really drastic, they would take immediate measures and immediately move that person out. He feels that the laity can be that kind of aid person out in the world. If they have been taught to detect the many kinds of problems that are going on, he thinks, for instance, courses in listening, how to hear what people are saying beyond the words when they are hinting, as often they do. They talk to you about something, they really mean something else. Maybe their marriage is in tough shape. Maybe they're talking about losing their job. Maybe they talk about scared of going to school. But they talk about something else because they're afraid yet to say that. And a number of things that he illustrates. Emotional, maybe mental, certainly spiritual problems that could be detected. Then he thinks, too, some of that can be taken care of just by chatting with people. People often are looking for somebody to talk to. Doctors again and again say, many of my patients are sick only to the extent that nobody will sit and listen to them complain. And so he says, I get paid dollars an hour to do that when I really would like to practice medicine. Thirdly, he thinks that some people are gifted in counseling, can listen and talk back. He thinks some of those people could be trained in the congregational's educational program to do some minimal counseling, not, you know, depth of therapy, any of that. And then finally, he thinks also the person ought to be trained of how to refer them to someone else who can help. Maybe it is a deeper problem. Maybe it should be the pastor. Maybe it should be a social worker. Maybe it should be someone else. He thinks the laity, in their work, in their neighborhood, in their community, organization, or wherever else it may be, he thinks they can be trained to be about that kind of work, and the goal of the congregation is to support them. You see, what he's doing is turning upside down. Most of the time we say, what can the lay people do to help the congregation? He says that's the reverse. What can the congregation do to help the lay person do their ministry out in the world? And that's what his aid is, that way of doing, that sensing, that detector, the front line, the people that are closest to where the action is. It's amazing that when pastors get to hear of some of the problems that are going on, some pastors are very close. I know one, he's in a very small town. He's down at the coffee shop, you know, at 9:30 every morning, where, you know, the whole town's business is transacted in that coffee shop, 9:30. There isn't much that happened in town you didn't hear about if you've been down there at 9:30. Well, that's neat. You know, he's staying in touch with lots of things going on. But there's many pastors in small towns and big cities that never hear. And usually it is so drastic before you hear about it. This is indeed my complaint, mostly with the counseling I do in marital problems. Before they get to somebody who really wants to make a serious effort to do something about it. You know, my approach to somebody who says, well, we made a mistake when we get married, my first reaction is, how come you're sure people who made a mistake how many years ago aren't making a mistake now? You can't be sure. Let's find out. I don't mean I force people to stay together, but I'm very serious about trying to see what can be done about it. Often, by the time they get to me, you know, it's pretty hopeless. They've gone through so many processes. If you had a first aid detector out there who could get people, urge people, console people, get people to better help faster, deal with things, bet more could be done. Okay? Second one, on the word, ministry of the words. I am taking longer. Here he's talking about how do you talk about your own faith. And he thinks the business of waiting for people to ask you why you believe for his life just never worked. What he needed is ways to learn how to initiate talking about the faith without turning the other person off. And he illustrates some ways to do it. Here's three really main things. Let me use those. Three ways in which laypersons minister to others through their spoken word. First, we minister by the way we express our own values. How we tell other people what is important to us, he thinks, is an initial kind of a witness. Now, he's not talking about the people we meet around the church so much. He's talking about in his luncheons at business meetings or in your meeting people wherever it may be, on a bus or a truck or wherever you find yourselves. Our outlook on life, our own style of life, he thinks that's initial, one of the first ways. Secondly, we minister by the way we express our viewpoint on the issues of the day. For instance, he says most of the people he hangs around with thinks everybody on welfare is absolutely lazy. And he says, I don't know how to say that, but he says, I play the game. I wonder what it would be like. I think that's right. I wonder what it's like. Rather than say to that person, judge not and you shall not be judged, and probably end the conversation, he said, I play the game of I wonder what it's like. I wonder what it's like to be retired with no pension and have to go on welfare. Or he says to somebody, I wonder what it's like to be in prison for a year. Or I wonder what it's like to be a lawmaker in Washington with so many viewpoints coming from my constituents. I wonder what it's like. How do you make up your mind about that? What he is saying, he isn't saying, you're wrong, I'm right, but he's raising questions about everybody being anything, you know? And so that's one of the ways he's trying to get in that conversation then. He hopes that it can be natural to say, well, the reason I think, and then can give the witness of his faith. He thinks that there are ways of working at that. He talks about the lines, he has six or seven lines that he uses that tells people that his values have changed. Not from good to bad or bad to good, but things have happened to him that have caused him to look differently at something. He thinks that enables other people to say, well, I have trouble with that. Or, boy, I've had gone through some change like that too, and I wonder if I'm right. So again, he has lead questions of getting in to get people to talk about their values, and he hopes about their faith. That's the ministry of words. I'll do quickly the two. The ministry of ethics means helping people to make choices. What do you have to look at when you make decisions that might have moral values involved? Some of them are obvious. They might be lifestyle. Are you going to live with somebody without being married or not? What are you going to say to your kids if they decide to do that? Well, there's pretty serious moral questions involved, and you can raise them. But often you don't know. Should I really stay with this company because it looks like I'm really going to get ahead? But in order to do that, I'm going to have to cut off this other guy every time I can because he's the guy who'll get my job if I don't. Or should I go with this other job and take some air? How do you make that decision? Or kids going to school, or going into certain kinds of businesses and stuff. There's all kinds of aspects of it along. He illustrates again and again of how ethical, moral decisions are being made, and most of the time, no one else to talk to you about it, much less the church. And again, he feels the clergy who don't face many of those are very hard-pressed, other than to say, well, you got to be honest. Well, sometimes two things look both honest and not so honest. How do you choose? That's another kind of a ministry. He thinks the layman, in his own experience and by other laymen, can help. They can help one another in making some of those choices. And the ministry of the change agent is the one where he thinks if things are bad, that you are convinced they are, wherever that may be in the society around you, if family life is going to pot, if welfare is being used as a way of life rather than a means for survival in order to get beyond it, or if education is going to the dogs, or if the company that you live around is really messing up the place, whether it's pollution or whether the way they treat people, what do you do about being part of the people who want to change that? Because you believe that Jesus Christ doesn't mean for people to be harmed, people to be manipulated, people to be subjected to pollution that really is unfair, or unfair labor practice, or if bad teaching is going on. Now, I don't mean teaching them evil, but teaching that isn't effective, or teaching that is really working in the wrong direction, as far as you're concerned, maybe in the far of other people concerned. He thinks in that area it is also possible for lay people to learn from the church teaching them how they can be part of that change. Not the congregation going out and taking a big barnstorming tour and putting up signs all over, but people who are really convinced, banding together in their neighborhood to do whatever has to be done. Our little town, all of a sudden we've got a big issue. It sounds silly when you're up here at Holden. We have a main street in our little town, 125 years old. Now the town is all west of us. We call it Progress. They put in a mall. I don't call it Progress, but that's where all the cars are now, hundreds of thousands of cars every week over there. But our little street, which was the main drag of downtown beautiful Madison, where we have four stores, they're going to widen the street. There are 189 trees on that street. And they want to, there are seven proposals for widening the street. The seventh one will take all but four of those trees. Well, the concern that we have about those trees and what will happen to the town if that thing, even if the trees could remain, which they couldn't, and you put in this big four-lane thing where there are three schools on that street and the zooming traffic, well, I was really pleased. I think that maybe half of the people who turned out for the public meetings that have come were from our congregation. And I was really delighted that they were out there to work in. And amazing, some young folks, one couple I married not too many years ago, were up there saying, have you ever checked out about, and they knew what happened to roots of trees. And they had all this information on it. I thought that was a marvelous ministry of all of those people to that community, because it was on the side of what I think is a really important issue, and that is you don't wreck the trees for all kinds of good reasons. So that kind of thing, that kind of a change agent. Those people were serving, they wouldn't have called themselves change agents, they were facing up to state government, federal government, and our local leadership, which was really pretty much intrigued with getting that big piece of change. Because underneath that street is a big sewer that has to be fixed anyway. So they were going to do a nice little package deal, and down go the trees. Man, there were about 400 people at that first meeting. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that was a ministry. That's what he means by that one. Well, enough of mine. He suggests that there are ministries like the Ministry of the Aid Man, Ministry of Ethics, Ministry of the Word, of Words, Ministry of Ethics, Decisions, Choices, and Ministry of the Change Agent, that he thinks we ought to really be about. Reactions, questions, suggestions, comments, illustrations?
No comment. Don't you think it, when he's talking of... His point, of course, is that we make too much of what's done in the church.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that where we have to start? I think sometimes that isn't even being done. So if you don't do that, how can you go out?
Yeah. I don't know what he says about that, but I would say too, if the church is in bad shape, I mean, about its essential task. I don't mean whether it's all organized well, but if it really isn't doing with the gospel well, then I don't think there's many points to this. I think he's assuming other books must be written to help the church get its own thing together.
But, I think some try that, though.
Oh, yeah, they think this is the answer to bad theology or lousy relationships between the people in the congregation. Yeah. Oh, I don't know what Deal says. I would hope that he'd say what I say, and that is, no way will this replace the real stuff. Somebody else?
Well, it's just a half a thought.
Go ahead, give us a half.
Thinking about some of these things, the laity going out and doing some of the things that often really require a professional hand. Isn't there a possibility that, I know I shouldn't put that as a possibility because it is a possibility.
Sure.
I wonder about turning too much of our of professional work over to people who are not prepared to do a good job. They make some mistakes than they were. And counseling.
I think it's possible, sure. I think that what many, let's use the illustration of medicine. It's not the only illustration, but maybe we could illustrate a couple with. I think many doctors today are coming to understand that paramedics, people who are, you know, more casually trained, are able to do many more things than we ever thought. But they could go too far,
right?
And that part of the training has to be, I think he makes a big point in that one section on detection, so that you know, when you're talking to this person, you get to be pretty sure, boy, that's something I better not touch. I better get him to somebody else.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking particularly in the area of a church where the pastor will try to get lay people to take care of the visitation.
Mm-hmm.
Very often, there are visitations that they mustn't.
Oh, yeah, sure. There are some serious things that really ought to be handled only by professionals.
I think there are dangers in going.
I do too. I wouldn't keep me from wanting to try because, you know, there's dangers in not doing anything too, you know.
Right.
See, lots of people are hurting that nobody gets to because we don't do it. Some people may hurt more if we try, I think you're right.
I haven't read the book, so I hate to comment, but I don't feel that he's advocating our going out necessarily in the name of Mountain View Lutheran Church, but simply as an individual.
Right.
And if it comes up that I go to Mountain View Lutheran Church, that is terrific.
That's
and
right.
If it doesn't, that's just
right.
Fine too.
Sure.
So I see that as a little differently from what he said, in that the minister is, you know, training these people and then perhaps go visiting in your own congregation. I see it as he wants us to do these things wherever we happen to be.
Right. I think that's exactly what he wants. I thought he was using the illustration like when in a congregation they do that, that risk comes there, and the same kind of risk might happen out here, only not in the congregation.
But there is a risk with everything we do,
right.
And a professional counselor could just as easily misread someone as I could read.
I think I said yesterday, when I refer people, I will only take 3 counseling sessions with anybody, and then I refer. And I have a list of people to refer to, and I have a list of people never to refer to. And that list is as important as the first one. To me, you know, somebody else may refer to this, but those people, in my mind, have wrecked so many, I won't go near them. And they're professionals of the first order. You know, I mean, in terms of the credentials, the degree. So you're right. But he is talking about, what do you do just wherever it is, wherever you are? If you work downtown in Chicago, or if you work in a mill somewhere, or work in a store, or if you work a hairdresser, my goodness sakes, the amount of conversation and things that a hairdresser gets into, or a barber, or I remember what a barber is. It's a long time since I've been there. But a gas station attendant, and a garage mechanic, basically, a bartender, of course, is always illustrated, is a person that, for whatever reason, people will just start talking to them. I find myself, I talk to a gas station attendant almost every time. I'll tell him where I'm going. He doesn't care where I'm going. I don't even know him. I mean, I know his name from up on top, but I tell him. It's a strange business. I was laughing at myself afterwards that I did. I'm glad I did it, but I was like, why did I do that? It's funny.
I think it's important to reiterate what we said yesterday, that the scattering is taking place. It could be done much better, perhaps, but it is taking place. The concern is that the church isn't really equipping us. Whatever scattering we do it on our own.
Right.
The church isn't really supporting us in it, let alone equipping us. And perhaps the information never even gets back to the minister or whoever, to someone who might carry it on farther.
And another thing he was saying, that we ought to recognize people who do that as doing ministry. We tend to say, well, now, if you've been a Sunday school teacher, we'll have a recognition Sunday and we'll give you a certificate. Well, another person whose talent isn't to do that might be doing something else out there that is really, really important. Walter Meyer, in our, again, back to our little town, has been on the village board until about a year and a half ago, for about 17 years. I thought he always should have been recognized as a minister of our congregation. I don't mean representing Zion Lutheran's point of view on that board, but his work was to be an honest commissioner, sensitive and understanding and committed to keeping our town going. And as far as I'm concerned, although he was active on other boards, I would have excused him from all the other stuff if he was really working hard at that, in addition to being a very good carpenter and whatever else he was in life. And recognize that. I think it would have been neat to have him report, Walter report, sometime in a congregational meeting, not to tell us the behind the scenes, but to tell us about his ministry. I think it would have been neat to hear. But all we heard from was the Board of Stewardship and the Board of Evangelism. Those reports should be done too. I'd like to hear about somebody else's, what they're doing. And I think it would be pretty exciting. Or the lady yesterday who had a ministry to raspberry pickers, you know. What would that be like? Wouldn't it be interesting for a congregation to know what's being done by these people?
Well, and in her case, they didn't even think that that possibility might exist, that she could even have a ministry to berry pickers, let alone have something to say to the congregation about it. Their concern was that she wasn't at the Bible study on such and such day.
On Wednesday night, because this was berry picking time.
Do you think it has anything to do with if a congregation did this, they would be concerned about, then they would become responsible for the actions of or the sayings of any of these people that they're scattering?
Mm-hmm. What do you think? I surely never agreed with all the things Walter Meyer did in our town, but I sure was also glad he was there. I don't know, but maybe people would think that. Anybody?
Does he tend to advocate, the pastor that tries to keep in touch with his people too, the little town you were talking about where he goes in the coffee shop?
Well, again, within reason, because he's talking about huge congregations, where there might be 12 or 2,000 members, where it would be tougher to do, but also, for some kind of bridge to be made so that the pastor does know more about what's going on. Yes, he does.
But does he, relate that to part of the problem, that the pastors are getting more and more separated from them?
Well, he thinks even when people would tell him about it, unless they've experienced it himself, it's a very tough thing. He used an illustration about a fellow who called him up and in the steel business, steel operations, and wanted him to help fix prices. And the guy said, if you don't do that, my company will go down the tube and 40 years of work will be lost, my kids won't go to school, and all this kind of stuff. Well, he went to his pastor, and the pastor encouraged him to be honest, but it was the other lay people who were able to help him see, hey, you know what's happening? And then they analyzed the business because they could see behind having experienced that kind of stuff. Whereas the pastor was limited in what he could actually help him with. He could be support. So his contention was that the pastor then becomes that nourishing and strengthening and maybe, as you say, learning more about it, but building you up so you can even get your own kind of advice. That's that decision of the ministry of ethics. Because, if you come to me with a problem of ethics in the faculty of your high school, well, I can tell you some things about that, but I don't know very much about how faculties in high schools work and how the superintendent relates to the principal who relates to the assistant principal who relates to the school board. Now, maybe it's very normal, I don't know, but I'd be hard-pressed to tell you what to do about it, but I could maybe help some principals that might be involved.
But maybe a pastor who is very close to his parish, which has got to be rare these days anyway, maybe he could then say, that question is beyond me, but how about if you go check with Joe Cole?
Yeah, right. Great. That, I think that's exactly what Theo would say. That would be the best part. If you knew enough that you had somebody else close to it. A fellow that comes up here once in a while, Pastor Umha Wolf from Ohio, he would do that. Maybe some of you know him. He would, one Sunday a year, he'd have all the doctors, and he had a large congregation. All the medics would come. And they'd come for a period of time, maybe 6 hours during a Sunday. And then he'd meet with them. And there would be a special service that was talking about their ministry. They'd have lunch together, and then they'd talk ethics. And they'd talk all the business about that. And he said, now, I couldn't insist that they all be there one time. I certainly can't insist they be there every Sunday because of all the things that go on. And sometimes that is the only time they can break away for their own health. But he says, that Sunday, we worked. And he says, yeah, that was like how many Sundays worth of sermons, because I could zero in exactly on the issues that they wanted to deal with. And then he would bring in, he had a bunch of teachers. I know one congregation that had 30 public school teachers in it. Now, if that pastor didn't get them together sometime, you know, I thought that, I think that he was dumb. Just to know each other and talk. That was probably frightening, you know. But I
wonder about anything that might come out of that. My husband is a physician, and if he should call the pastor because of something he ran into when he was making rounds or something, or a teacher who says about somebody's child is having trouble, then do you ever get in trouble?
Oh, yeah, I would mean to do that. I would mean more to say, how do you go about being a good teacher? How do you handle that problem? Okay. Don't tell me about what you do out there, but how do you be a good teacher? How do you be a responsible doctor? Yeah, I think the other would be very tricky, and obviously involved confidences and other things that would be very tough. And a pastor would be hard pressed. He might know very much about it, and he couldn't say. Anybody else?
One of the things that we did in our congregation related to the theme of ministry of laity was to take slides and tape recorders to the working places of lay people and take pictures of them in word and then asking the question of what does it mean to be a Christian in word, and then to weave that into kind of discerning meditation.
That's neat.
And a number of people responded that it made them think a lot about their own work, even though they weren't in the slides or the tape. It made them think about, well, what does it mean to be a Christian in word?
Great. We've done that with kids, with high school youth, a number of times. Just to, you know, show them. People often say, well, I don't have anything to say to kids, and the kids are really intrigued by it. It's what you do. It's really neat. You have a chance to talk about that. And as you say, you know, they're there already. You know, we aren't sending anybody out. They're already scattered. You know? Oh, that's what I liked yesterday. The lady from Los Angeles who said their map of their congregation has on it where they all live in one color, and then in another color, where they all work. And what was there's a third one?
Leisure.
Where they went for leisure. And it covered the whole business of around Los Angeles, where their people reached out, the network, for where they went. I thought that was really neat to show that
tremendous undertaking for someone.
To
right?
do that.
I mean, just the pure technical part of doing that.
Let's say, 100 and even 150 people to do that. That's amazing.
Years ago, when we were talking about our congregation, over 30 years, but out in the rural, but we had drawn up a map and had pinpointed every family in the church, and those that were members, we had read, read the little pins, and blue ones were the ones that were not members. We knew who they were. But today, that's grown over about twice, thirds, I don't know how many times over. We couldn't begin to reach or get off.
Yeah.
But we're going to go into this again now, where we're going to go out and canvas the whole hill, but we can't begin to pinpoint every perhaps.
Sure.
But it's been done a lot of times, and it has been good.
Our congregation has, again, where they live. But what our congregation doesn't have is where they work. Or where they go for leisure. You know, all the people, you know, they've got little circles around the church, and you know, and it's, we can tell how many miles their house is from the church. But their work, oh my, you know. Some of our people I know travel 40, 50 miles one way to work.
Do you think there would be any people who would be very much opposed to this and say, I don't want my pin on your
map? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. It'd be interesting. You know, it doesn't maybe send anybody out, but it seems to me it's really an interesting understanding of the congregation, rather than being so focused in that building, which is indeed where they are when they gather, but when they're out, man, they're out. And that's interesting.
Well, we had the Billy Graham Crusade. We had to go out and conquer all over the hill.
Sure.
And that was a challenge. I didn't know how we were going to contact one area. We had volunteers, a younger one, this fellow. He had a motorcycle. He went to every home and all, and helped get this thing set up. And all I needed to do was to get the men to be the bus drivers for each evening. And that was even a challenge. Because you had to go and they had to get the license to drive the bus and so forth. But when people work together like that time, it was just really a lot of fun, and it's really good. It does something for a congregation. Summer, but anyway, the last one of that, came to mind to speak about being a missionary wherever you are.
Uh-huh.
And first I said, ask how many here would like to go out as a missionary? There were no hands that went up, you know, that age group was so scared. But I said, the Lord has called me to be in the kitchen. I can be missionary there. So whatever you were doing, whatever you set out to do, wherever you worked, or you can be a little light for the Lord there.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be there as well as
me. But it's not you that you can be, or you may choose not to be. You are.
Mm-hmm.
You're either positive or negative.
One way or the other.
You are.
That's good. Good point. And my people from the other denominations really go after me, but solidly, for all the talk that Lutherans do about the ministry of the laity, because Martin Luther said that, what you just said, as beautifully and as powerfully as I think anybody ever has. And really, going back to the Reformation time was when that kind of talk became more prominent, and largely in echoing of Martin Luther. And of all of the denominations that tend to be so clergy-oriented and clergy-dominated, rather than espousing, the work of the laity, they really lay it on me thick. And I legitimately, I can kid them or ask them about other things, but on that one, they really got me. That's right. And I agree. I believe that, I think that's partly been the clergy's need for dominance and ego and all that other stuff, but I think I said yesterday, if I didn't, I'm willing to say it today, I think the kind of clergy we have today is exactly what the laity want. I think they got what they asked for, and that if it could be changed, it could be changed by clergy, sure, or it could be changed by laity. I really believe both sides could do it. And so I'm not trying to lay it on one or the other, I think both. Both are in this boat together, and we both bear responsibility. Yes, sir.
Elmer, what's your reaction to this? I hear that Billy Graham negates the social issues of the day. He says he's one that's on page 16.
Oh, yeah, I remember that he did say that.
Invited to the White House because he said personal piety and ignored the social issues of the day. Elmer, Billy Graham is personification of this.
Yeah.
I think that's I think it's a pretty strong statement.
Yeah. I don't know that I agree with that. I think Graham would say, I've heard him say, that, that his issue isn't to be raising some of these things, but that people should be led on to face those kinds of things. And I think that's a legitimate aspect of, commitment that a person can have. I've never studied Graham that much, or the work that he's done. I've heard him scored from a Lutheran point of view more on the business of baptism, to treat the essence of New Testament Christianity as one of his books does, and not to mention baptism as the New Testament does, really is a very difficult thing to do, to honor the New Testament, because baptism is a central part of the New Testament message for the Gospels as well as for the Epistles. And that's where I've heard Billy Graham scored much more than on this, but others, I have not made a study of Graham. It's funny, many of the universities today, you know, I'm a campus minister at a university, are so beset with people who are allied with Billy Graham, either through Campus Crusade or the, even one of the major. Our university doesn't even have that. Pardon?
Is it Youth for Christ?
The Youth for Christ isn't so much on campus as it's off, but there's another one that's like that too. But we don't have any of those on our campus, so I don't have any much contact with them. And the reason we don't is that we have an older student body. Our average age is 32, so that's not the appeal that they have. So I don't have a lot of contact out of my ministry with those things. Yeah, very strong, this other one, I've forgotten the name of it, very strong movement. Very, very heavily funded also.
In a way, I think it's a shame to attack Billy Graham or any others, because, I mean, we have to have people like Billy Graham too. It seems like you intimated at the beginning. We simply can't say, well, we can't be gathering.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't where it's at. It's scattering. Mm-hmm. We need a little of this and we need a little of that. We need to be come in and have our cup
mm-hmm.
filled, so to speak, so we can pour out during the week, so we can come back and be filled up again.
Mm-hmm.
And if Billy Graham is filling cups in a way that they can be emptied, that is
mm-hmm.
certainly ministry too.
From the scattering to the gathering, that's where I see the church becoming less and less involved in scattering than it was a few years ago.
I think that, I don't know if you heard Walter Capps this morning, were you here? I think that he was saying that same thing, that this, that what happened during the 50s and 60s, that was, I think that he was from a church historian's point of view. He's not a church historian, but from a history of religion in the last 20 years or so, I think he's saying the same thing. And I think I feel the same way. The fact that churches that are less, don't say this as perhaps as strongly, are growing faster today, tend to be, I think that would support that.
I wonder what that says.
What do you think?
Well, the epitome of that has to be this monk situation.
Yeah.
Which I just can't imagine really even monasteries existing. Here they are growing, which is really incredible to
mm-hmm.
me. But you're right, so that just
sure.
proves beyond anything that it is true.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how much they are growing, but the business of contemplation and of meditation and reflection, which I see a lot of people who live out in the world but also do that I think is very strong. And the move, as it was, it isn't anymore than where I hang out. I mean, in Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio, I travel for Lutheran campus ministry. The movement towards Eastern religions, that's not a big thing anymore. That's really a thing of the past. But that move was similar to that. You know, let's withdraw, as he said. You know, it was, let's get over here and be away by ourselves. That was, I think, reflective of the same business. I think it was Erling Jorstad was here 2 weeks ago from St. Olaf. And he was saying that people who saw, they can't really touch much out there, whatever these issues may have been. And maybe it was the war, maybe it was racism, or whatever it might be. Said, well, gee, then I'm going to go back and I'm going to work on the thing that I can. And if they didn't have anything like that, then they went, the next step was, oh, I'm going to go where there isn't anything. I mean, I don't know what it is. I think the move towards family and towards, which I think is great, towards family and marriage, was often also because, well, gee, I can't do anything of it there. At least I'm going to get into this. And I think that's great. It may not have been only your best reason, but if it is focusing on strengthening family and marriage, as a place to learn how to go out. I think the best part of, I think I've said that, I don't know if to this group, the best part about having children is sending them out. Watching them go is the funnest part of all. That's why we had our children, and they are more exciting today to us than they ever were when we had them around the house. And it's just a delight. Telephone bill is expensive, but it's a delight to have them out there doing their thing and being excited about the life that they're living. And I think that's a good, another good style of understanding what the family is about. One of the trainings of the family is, how does the family relate to the world around it? As it gathers and is strengthened and is sent out.
Well, maybe the reason for more of the gathering and less of the scattering is because the church is not doing its work of preparing you or helping you.
Yeah, that's what Neil would say. That's what he would say very strongly. Yeah.
Well, that there's so, the issues out here are so complex.
Yeah.
We need to spend more time in here to prepare us for out there too.
Yeah. And also, as I guess he's saying, you may not be able to tackle the economics, the economic trends of the age, but you may be able to deal with, like one fellow was telling me here, he's in the budget office of the state transportation department of California. There he can do something. And I think he ought to be supported by the church, not by the church sending a message, why don't you do that, but to say, hey, that's great, and you're careful, Christian commitment at that point is really important. But he, Deal goes further when he says in this chapter, way near the one that we can take a look at tomorrow if you're interested, some of the content for equipping, what we're talking about now, has already been mentioned in previous conferences. All of us should have a course on effective listening, he thinks. He doesn't know any place where that's offered. I happen to know some congregations that have offered courses in listening. Not only for going out into the world, too, but listening to each other, of course, too. For those who see themselves in a ministry of the aid person, that one chapter, he thought courses on first aid or psychology. For instance, he did a study on how people don't respond when somebody's being hurt, you know, when somebody's being abused or something like that. There are studies that indicate that the larger the group, the less chance of anybody going. And the smaller the group, you know, if there are one or two people, there's a probably a 50% chance better that someone will be helped. And then often the fear of not knowing what to do. And he says, well, maybe what we need is people that know what to do in those kinds of situations and take the risk. First aid, psychology, sociology, he's talking about elementary stuff, I know. Counseling, interpersonal relationships, they might make sense. For those whose gifts lead them toward verbal communication, that ministry of the words, verbal communication of faith, courses in Bible, theology, communication skills seem to be basic ones. For those whose ministries carry them into ethical struggles in the life, which affect the lives of others, we could have courses in ethics, economics, logic, and decision making. And for those who would be moved toward being change agents in society, would be skilled in organizational dynamics, again in psychology, communication, government studies. Because the range of ministry abroad, the skills required are diverse. And then he thinks, again, most of it should be the people doing it and coming back and saying, where I really didn't know a thing, when I didn't know anything, what to do was, but come back to the congregation or the group of people that are banding together to support them. And as he said yesterday, that might not happen in a congregation right away. So it might be just members of a congregation that get together, not anti the congregation, but for their own, to get things moving in that area. But to look to the congregation and for support.
Well, I think this, of course, is a personal example, but I am a nurse and I work in a retirement home.
Mm-hmm.
And I recently, the family had to make the decision about putting my mother into a nursing home.
And how?
And I, as a professional, found it a very difficult thing to do personally.
Indeed.
And I found that the church gave me no help whatsoever, and I wonder how people who don't have at least my background can cope with things like that, because it was not just me, it's my husband, my children,
sure,
my sisters, my brothers, and my mother, who was a central figure. And I found no help whatsoever as far as the church was concerned.
I think that's a good illustration.
You know, everybody was very professional, but nobody really was interested in the emotional trauma that was presented to all of us concerned, and how to cope with guilt feelings and all the other financial problems. And there was nobody there. You know, in fact, I think I probably felt it more acutely than anyone else, because simply because that was my field, I should know all about it, you see.
It's a good illustration of where I think congregations can be helped. I think those resources are around. I don't know, in your area, I would know whom to go to in Chicago to set up a training program for that. I don't think there's any question about that availability of competent people in that field and competent people with theological and clinical chaplaincy training who could help have courses for folks. Not way later on, maybe in the 40s, when they're in their 40s. To help them get ready for that. Having gone through the same, I surely agree that that's a very difficult decision.
But just the technical bookkeeping situations of setting that all up, let alone the funding, if there is any, besides the practical things of if you have to heat the church another night, can you pay for it and all those things, that is an unbelievable task for any congregation. How many courses did you list there? It must have been 20, 25 or more. And in her situation, I can see that there's an element of each one of the four chapters today in that one situation. Isn't
sure.
There?
But it seems to me that I think that's what Dela's saying. If we started in that direction over a period of years, and it may not be every congregation is doing it, this is where he hopes congregations would begin to share too. That you'd begin to. Now, for instance, the ALC congregation where I help out. They come to me all the time saying, hey, what can we do in our adult education course? They've got some money, you know, minimal, maybe $20 or something like that a week if they want to bring somebody in, or just finding people in the congregation. And man, they've had some first class programs on alcoholism done by people in the parish who have alcoholics in their family and are working with the alcoholic treatment centers in the area. Well, now they didn't get the pro, the top doc, but man, they got a lot of the first-hand information about alcoholism in South Cook County from that kind of session. And the chaplain I was thinking of meeting there could come to that congregation to do it, probably as part of his ministry, you know, again, without much cost. But I agree. First off, you'd be hard-pressed. I think we'll be, you know, that's why I think we have to move and get a backlog and then a sharing of this kind of thing. So that at a synod convention or a district convention, one of the things being shared is, what are we doing to equip our laity, rather than just, what's the latest Bible course? And I'm for that Bible course, too. It's not either or. That's a good one. We had a number of good sessions before I came here on the aging and on the nursing homes, apparently about 3-4 weeks ago. Yeah, here, while we were in the village. Well, I didn't mean to say it, but
yeah,
I think it's been raised by, what I'm saying is a number of people are raising that issue. Well, about time. Oh, this is after, isn't it? If you're interested in talking about work as you see it tonight, we're going to have a forum at 9 in which you have a chance to share about that. Glad to see you there if you can be. Thanks much.